Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, WWE fans, Ring of Honor fans, and if there's any little scraps of TNA fans out there, welcome to the RSN podcast. This is Rich. We have Sal on one of the lines.
Hey, what's up?
We got Nick. We got Nick.
Yo, how's it going?
In today's podcast, we'll be talking about invasions. Basically, what an invasion is, it could be another promotion coming in and feuding with a promotion. It could also be groups coming in that have been put together to invade a show or a pot or another promotion. Nick, when you hear invasion, what is the biggest one that comes to your mind?
I mean, not in terms of success, but just word alignment, you know, like kind of like wordplay. Sadly, I tend to think of the 2001, you know, invasion angle that was supposed to be like this big thing. I think it was just essentially another way for WWE to quote unquote kill WCW and ECW again. Even though back when it happened, you know, you had all these big stars, and it felt like a huge thing at the time, but part of that was probably because we were about 10 years old, and, you know, we were kind of used to that kind of thing from the product of the Attitude Era, but, you know, looking back on it now, you probably need about 5 people, all their fingers and toes, to like go off the list of how that angle could have been better presented and things amongst that nature. But, you know, usually when I think of a wrestling invasion, 2001 comes to mind.
So, what about you?
Well, I mean, invasion, when you talk about invasions in wrestling, it's kind of a big topic, and it has a lot of people talking. I agree with Nick, you know, Invasion with the Alliance angle was a pretty big deal. I mean, at the time, you gotta understand, WWE bought out their competition, and now there's this whole talk that's been going on for years in the Monday Night Wars, you know? So this is a great fallout, and I think that was a perfect time, perfect place to do it right then and there. I mean, we'll talk about this later on, but, you know, when it comes to wrestling invasions, that probably sticks out the most. What about you, Rich?
Just for the fact that we've all witnessed basically almost all the invasions, I think the best one was the NWO invasion after Hall, Nash, and Hogan left WWF and they jumped ship to WCW. Just for the fact that even though people knew it was coming, they were still in shock.
True. I think most angles, they're supposed to set up that way, you know, they're supposed to bring people to a shock. I mean, there's prevalent in a lot of angles where people were caught by surprise. It's unprecedented. At times, it's great when it's unscripted, when it's unplanned, not pre-planned or anything like that. When it's just straight off the bat and, like, you know, straight off the bat and it flows perfectly. That, I think, really does draw something, you know, to say, okay, that is unexpected. It's something you probably would never see. It's something that was unbelievable, you know. But, yeah, NWO, when they come through, that was pretty big. And you've seen that in most angles. You've seen that in ECW angles. You've seen that in mostly in the TNA angles recently. That's been going on. There's numerous angles where that's happened. And it's pulled off greatly sometimes. Sometimes where it's been pulled off very poorly.
That is true. There have been not really that much, but there's maybe a few, if even that many, poor invasion angles.
True. I mean, well, invasion angles, you know, like, first let's get off the bat with invasion, you know, invasion, the purpose of an invasion angle. Like, what do you guys feel is the main motivation of an invasion angle in wrestling, you know?
It's to give birth to new feuds, present a new threat. It's usually a great way to immediately introduce newer fans to an already established group elsewhere. And at the same time, you know, it allows for, like I said before, like new feuds, you know, just all around stuff you've never seen in that company before that's made possible because of this angle. You know, we got segments, you know, it really opens up the floodgates in terms of creative direction.
True. There's a lot of, in addition, there's a lot of co-promotion. It's good for both sides at times. There's times where it helps both things. Plus, it gives, like, the fan, everyone fantasy, where they had, you know, the dream matches. Now it's in the reality. I mean, you've seen this in a couple of past years ago, you know, that this whole TNA and WWE angle where they've had made promos. If you go on YouTube, there's a whole bunch of fan-made promos on dream matches with similar people, parallels in different companies, and they supposedly fight off. They put, like, clips of different promos and everything. Have you guys ever seen this? Like, they put different clips of other people talking, and they tie it in and actually make a pretty badass promo. You should guys check it out online if you guys get a chance. But it's crazy, you know. I mean, for the fan perspective, I think it adds more. It's really good for the business. Don't you guys think?
I feel like sometimes you give a wrestling fan Final Cut Pro endless supply of bad ideas and YouTube's video limit, and sometimes the results could be deadly. But for the most part, I'd say a majority of those videos, you know, are in fact a cool way to see, like, you know, what could happen. You never know. Anything in wrestling is possible, and people end up working at one company, jumping ship to another. We're seeing it more now. Obviously, NXT is like, quote-unquote, the place to be. We've seen already about 3 or 4 TNA talent who were TNA talent at the beginning of this year are suddenly now in NXT. You know, it's a way to make, you know, where they're going feel fresh, you know. Storm, Joe, you know, NXT feels like the place to be right now, and TNA is kind of left with scraps of what they've been trying to build, which kind of isn't much, but, you know, you guys kind of see where I'm going with this?
True. Yeah, I see. I mean, it's crazy. Like, you see, I mean, we're going to get to this later, but, I mean, you know, like, if you talk about the chronology of all the invasions that have happened in this whole era of, you know, the recent era of professional wrestling, back in the day in the 80s and 90s, we probably wouldn't see it that much. But, you know, I mean, let's start from, you know, the very beginning. I'd say, I mean, you know, very infamous angle. We're talking about this one angle. Rich brought this up, the NWO. What do you guys really think that made a bigger impact? I mean, obviously we know that, you know, if we were to take down the NWO invasion, we would probably break it into two parts. We'd have the outsider invasion, and then we'd have the NWO, where it was at its peak in WCW. Like, you know, if you guys were to say, you know, which would be more significant, you know, the outsider's angles or the NWO coming in?
Well, outsiders.
Yeah, I was going to say outsiders, because if you think about it, that started the NWO. Because I don't remember who Hogan was facing, but at the end of the match, that's when he brought out Paul and Nash. And that's when he said, "We are the new world order of wrestling."
True. I mean, it's like Nick has said before too, invasions, that's the purpose of it. It brings out other new characters, brings out whole new possibilities. I mean, at that time, you gotta understand, people had the mindset that the outsiders came and they invaded WCW. And WCW really took advantage of that when these guys clearly were not aligned with WWE, but there was this mentality that, okay, that they were. And at that time, it was unheard of to see someone jump shift 1, 2, 3 to another company. That was kind of bizarre, you know? And I think that was...
especially the names of who it was. Indeed. It was three of the biggest names in wrestling.
True. I think with any angle, with any invasion angle, if you see any big names that come in and they make an impact, that's where it starts. That's where an invasion begins. That's where it has. If you track every invasion that has happened in wrestling, it all links to one name that's prominent in whatever they've done. I mean, let's switch gears into, I'd say, ECW. When ECW was in its early stages, WWF was in its early stages, ECW came out, and, you know, you saw them in the crowd. Slowly, they start coming in, and, you know, all the wrestlers are kind of peaked up. They're saying, what the hell's going on? And then Paul comes out and says, man, has this show sucked? And then what happened? There was a whole takeover. ECW took over Raw at one point. And that's, you know, that's the co-promotion angle right there. I mean, what are you guys' thoughts on that, you know, that whole setup there? Do you think it kind of benefited? Because a lot of people said that Vince, it was a stupid decision on his part from doing that. Do you think it kind of hurt him, or how do you guys feel on that?
No, I disagree. What I'm thinking of is, you know, the two companies would actually work together not too long after that. This is in 1997. You had ECW kind of share Raw, per se. I don't know if you guys remember the spot where Sabu jumped off the top of the R on the stage. That was probably the most notable spot of that whole angle.
Publicity, right? It was basically publicity for them.
Yeah, it gave ECW exposure, and it was also allowing WWF, you know, because they're getting killed in the ratings against WCW, and WCW at this time, you know, they're telling this WCW versus NWO angle as good as you can. Basically, NWO is almost their own company that are basically going to start signing away people from WCW. They're becoming this big, unruly group. And WCW, you know, they still got their loyal people like Luger and Sting and, you know, DDP, you know. So you got that whole war building up over the whole course of a year. You know, it's going to culminate with Sting and Hogan at Starrcade 97. So they had this whole year planned out. They basically won the whole year in 1997. And if you watch the shows, Nitro is the better show. WWE, you know, they were trying to find their way early 97, not really quite finding, you know, it until I'd say maybe the summer when they had Bret Hart turn heel and he had the whole Hart Foundation 2.0. And that, you know, once he started, you know, feuding with Austin, that's when they started to gain some momentum. But WCW had it this whole time. So earlier before this, you know, they had ECW share Raw with WWE. And, you know, I think it was an experiment that worked out for both. And, you know, it's been, I've heard that Vince McMahon even, you know, lent money to Paul Heyman, and as you can see, you know, it was able to keep him afloat, you know, that much longer. But, you know, when you're looking for new content, you know, if you're going to cross-promote with another company, why not? You want an edgier product. ECW was under any edgy product. So you just put the two things together and, like, you know, why you got WCW over there with their, like, you know, they're the place to be, but, you know, WWF, you know, it's not like you're going to turn it on and just turn the channel off either. You know, they still got a pretty quality, you know, television show, and, you know, at least that's what I think of when I hear the ECW-WWE partnership is that time in 97. You know, they're just trying to find a way to break WCW's momentum.
Indeed, yeah, true. I mean, when you're facing like a multi-billion-dollar company, like WCW, a big monster, how are you gonna combat that? You know, so I think in their mentality, they're thinking, why the hell not? Let's just co-promote. That works for everybody. And I think that's what with most companies right now. If you see right now in the current era, AAA got a partnership with almost every single promotion right now. WWE got a small thing with NJPW. You see TNA, they've had past relationship with Triple H, Triple A, yeah, Triple A.
Yeah, Triple A.
Yeah, screw it.
It's just but, I'm saying Triple H.
Triple H, I know, yeah. It's like, I mean, there's so much, you know. You see TNA, they've had the many partnerships like that. You've seen, you know, many promotions. ROH is on it with Japan.
But look at TNA with their coexisting companies. Not doing too well because the people who are coming in from other companies into TNA aren't staying that long. The only one that's been staying is Tigre Uno.
True. I mean, that's the time period right now. I mean, back then in the WWF ECW era, that was probably the only time that would happen, you know, where it was like, okay, you had to, where it was solid. But here, it's like, it's not really that solid this time now. Like, if you look now, all these promotions, there's so much competition out there that it's very hard to co-promote because there's always going to be one overlapping the other, and then that's it. I mean, you see that in many different angles. If you've seen, let's take it a little bit further on, you know, let's talk about the, you know, ECW and WWE in 2006. You had Rob Van Dam, he had the Money in the Bank. Yep. You've seen that whole thing build up right there, ECW relaunch. You had a Rob Van Dam come in, use the name, headline One Night Stand, and then won the championship and that night. And that was something big right there because you saw a resurgence of ECW coming into WWE. And at that point, you were thinking, holy shit, like, are they really taking over? And what I think that most things that separate the successful invasions from the not successful ones is reality. If it's reality-based, it will always do something. It will always make money. Because if you really notice, any angle that really didn't have any element of reality didn't really make that much, you know, success. Would you guys agree with that? Or, you know, how would you guys feel?
Well, the thing with that one, everyone kind of knew that wasn't going to last that long. The new breed, or whatever you want to call it, everyone knew that was just going to be like a temporary thing.
At that time?
But you can... Yeah, because you can't revive excellence in ECW.
Do you think it could have worked?
You can't really revive it.
But do you think it could have worked? I mean, think about, like, place yourself, let's say we could go back in the time machine. It's One Night Stand, we're watching the pay-per-view that night. You see John Cena come out, getting booed the hell out of. RVD come out, wins the title, 1-2-3, boom. You know, at that moment, I think most people just kind of said, this is not going to work. But then there were other people that were saying, oh, this is going to work, this is going to work, this is going to work, if they had the proper way of doing it. And obviously, Paul left, and then that every whole thing just escalated into a whole failure, you know?
Well, there is, RVD is probably kicking himself that, I believe it was him and Sabu, not too long after One Night Stand, because, you know, that had a big impact. You know, he beat John Cena. No one beats John Cena, but, granted, Edge helped him out in the match, if you remember, but,
he's with the motorcycle helmet.
Yeah, he did the unthinkable at the time. You know, he beat Cena and was now the, you know, the, I think it was the company's top title. What basically broke that momentum was RVD and Sabu, you know, getting caught driving under the influence.
Which is not new at all.
And then on top of that, I think they had marijuana possession as well. So with that whole thing happening, that basically derailed any high hopes of ECW really gaining momentum. And as you know, that's what caused the... they call it the July 4th screw job, but basically they had Heyman come out and try to recreate the whole One Night Stand thing where he comes out and does the three count. You know, RVD was fighting the Big Show, and, you know, it looks like it's set to happen again, and Heyman stops at 2, and then he turns on RVD. Big Show becomes a new champion, and it's happened in Philadelphia, of all places. So it wasn't really that warmly received, but... And then Sabu kind of fell off as well. So I think if you had RVD and Sabu, you know, really not get stopped with this whole, you know, with that police stop, you know, had that not happened, I think we could have, you know, I know it's 2015 now. I mean, I doubt, you know, ECW would have still been around, because it would have turned into NXT either way. But, I mean, I think it could have gone on a bit longer, but just because of not having RVD and Sabu, it forced WWE to make split decisions on who to have lead the way, and obviously Vince loved Bobby Lashley, and that led to the whole debacle that was December to dismember. But that is just way too much of a headache, and honestly, I like
my remember how horrible that pay-per-view was?
Yeah.
Do you also remember that TNA tried to answer that open challenge by Nitro and Mercury?
Yeah.
They actually posted something on their website saying, "We're going to be there." And then next thing you know, who comes out? The Hardy Boys.
Yep.
That was, yeah.
The ironic thing was, I think that was the best match on the whole show, because the rest of it was just, it was a shit show.
A blur. Yeah.
Although it's not completely Heyman's fault, because he did have some creative input, but he was completely overshadowed by Vince. I believe Heyman wanted to have Punk all the way till I think the final two of the Chamber, and Punk was gonna beat Big Show, who was the champion headed in. On the first pinfall, I think maybe a few minutes into the match by submission, already guaranteeing us a new champion. That was going to be his way of opening the match, and you would have made Punk already. But, you know, as we saw, Punk was the first guy eliminated, and RVD wasn't, you know, in the match long thereafter. And the whole thing just went downhill. The crowd didn't buy it. You know, no one was going to buy Lashley. And I don't know why Vince was so stubborn. As you know, he does it these days, too, with the whole Roman Reigns thing earlier this year. It's just something that's not going to change. And, you know, but as we saw with WrestleMania 30, you know, the crowd can make a difference. They do have a say. And it's just a way of seeing how things will work out.
True, that's another example of reality. Reality can also make an angle good, but it can also destroy an angle. Because if you saw with Sabu, they, you know, that whole thing got derailed. I mean, if you really talk about ECW that time, and 2006, and back in 1997, there's a lot of parallels. You saw different ways that it worked, because there was a lot of reality that played into it. Some that worked in his favor, some that didn't work in his favor. I mean, let's tie it into, let's say, you know, from when ECW fell in 2009, 2010. ECW fell, NXT came out, the reality show. And then the first season happens, boom, what happens? The next night, all NXT rookies destroy the whole set.
They destroyed about, of course, John Cena, they destroyed the ring.
Keyword, destroyed, asterisk, destroyed, so on called. Quote unquote. I mean, what do you guys think of that angle? Supposedly that was an invasion.
Yeah, I mean, it was a very good angle. And it was kind of brilliant the way they came about it, because you had NXT Season 1 to kind of get to know guys like Wade Barrett and Darren Young and Daniel Bryan.
Ryback.
Yeah, I mean, well, he was Skip Sheffield at the time, and then, you know, I think it was also Husky Harris, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is,
well, who is now Bray Wyatt.
Michael McGillicuddy.
You also have Justin.
Yeah, McGillicuddy.
Justin
Michael
Gabriel.
Turner, Gabriel. Yep. So NXT Season 1 was disguised as this whole pros and rookies kind of thing. You know, it did feel very reality-based, but a lot of the matches were terrible. I mean, there wasn't really a lot of build. There were some useless competitions. It felt, like, tired. I don't even want to address the Divas season that was. The only thing that might have saved that was CM Punk's commentary. And, I mean, I'll leave that one, you know.
We should
shouldn't be coming out of the bag either.
I think we spent too long
talking about it.
No one
saw it coming, and that's what made it so great. Basically, it renewed them enough to be like, oh, look, it's all the NXT rookies. Oh, what are they doing? Oh, look, they're oh my god, they're surrounding the ring. They're taking out everyone.
Oh my god, look
aggressive.
At yeah, they're like, oh my god, look at his tie. Is he choking with it? Oh my god.
Is that the first time we actually seen Cena weak?
Not really. I mean, that's probably the most publicized, overrated.
Probably.
Yeah, angle that ever, like, you know, that was like the most obvious way of him being, like, you know, overpowered. When in reality, I mean, you know, when you look at that whole thing, supposedly he was supposed to leave. Then his brother came in, brother, quote unquote, John Cena, with the whole mask thing going on, and oh my god, I'm not really John Cena. And back to Mr. America in 2003, like, of course, we all know it. Shit, you're not fucking.
It wasn't Hogan, though.
Fooling us. Yeah, it wasn't Hogan. Like, obviously, it's like, oh, you're not John Cena. You can't be. You're his brother. Like, the fuck
is
going
on? You just happen to have the same body type, use the same moves. You're just Juan Cena.
I think that, yeah, I mean, that whole time, I think the creative, they were kind of sticking their heads up their asses, thinking, okay, what do we do now? And you really saw that. It was so chaotic in the booking-wise. I mean, like, there was no... it wasn't concrete.
Well, back then, was Kevin Dunn head of creative?
Well, he's a stupid motherfucker because he can't book for shit. He's just a kiss-ass lackey that just likes to wear his tie, brown
he's
nose.
A white... What was the term you used? White collar...
Yes, man.
No good brown-nosing yes, man?
Indeed, yes, he is. He just... I mean... If you see most of the angles that ever failed, it will be forever tied with Kevin Dunn. When he passes away, I bet on his tombstone they're gonna have to etch every single angle that he fucked up on, and they're gonna have it with his name. I swear to God. And it's crazy the way that
they have a shitload of tombstones.
They have to. It's the whole graveyard. Fuck it. That's it. They have to do that now. But it's like, I mean, the whole Nexus angle. I mean, you know, back to the point. Nexus angle. I mean, if it was a whole flop, you know? I mean, it did bring up a lot of good careers. I mean, especially now, you see a lot of different things going on right now. Like, you see Bray Wyatt coming out, Skip Sheffield, who is now Ryback. You see David Otunga, who kind of got a little push, but then kind of sifted off.
He's backstage now.
Otunga wouldn't be one of the people I would point to as a success. Nicola Cuddy kind of fell along the wayside, too.
True. Husky, you know.
He was kind of a dropper, but now he's kind of found success elsewhere.
But I mean, this whole group of people, they've actually been successful as of late, and I mean wrestling as a whole. Because you see, Brian, after he got fired, supposedly for choking out the announcer, he went to the Indies and they called him back, and he was riding a whole wave of success. But I mean, you know, when you saw like things like CM Punk get involved in there. I mean, you really saw it was a kind of chaotic thing, and I think that's why it didn't really work. I mean, what did you guys really think that really kind of messed that whole thing up from the Nexus, from, you know, the whole new Nexus angle to, you know, the whole invasion angle? What would you guys say kind of flopped that whole thing?
It was because Punk wasn't really, I mean, yeah, Punk was a really good heel. I think he might have had his best mic work during this time period. But that's the thing. The group didn't really... They weren't really seen as threats.
They weren't believable, right?
Yeah, they weren't really believable. Nothing was really done to establish them as threats. They were kind of just there. And, you know, I think they just gave it to Punk to keep him busy for a few months. It was kind of like a poor rehash of the Straight Edge Society, just without the whole quote-unquote Punkness thing to it. But the ironic thing was Punk was able to transition to the Rebel because of that gimmick. And I think because of a lot of what didn't work with that was what sparked this like vocal outrage. And that in turn helped to, you know, usher in, you know, the reality era, because that's what spawned his, his pipe bomb promo. Because as you saw, like he was transitioning out of Nexus leader, because he was still wearing the armband, and I think he was starting to like slip back the hair, and he had the T-shirt, and slowly over the weeks that kind of diminished, and you know that's what kind of helped Punk become Punk. And that's the only good thing that ever came out of the new Nexus, frankly.
Which is kind of counterproductive, too. I mean, you know, you've seen, like, NXT, the whole NXT thing was a developmental thing for the future, a developmental process for stars to get into the main roster. That was Vince's vision. Obviously, now that we see it, we've seen a more clearer, more crisper, more in-depth look at it, and it's much more solid, much more concrete, much more productive. But at that time, I think it was kind of a waste of time, because you had all this talent get involved, only one good thing came out of it, and it was like, you know, what do we do with these other guys? Now they just created more of a dilemma for themselves. I mean, to add on, you know, to move on to another great ambition angle, let's move on to another promotion, TNA. They have had two specific invasions that have occurred. You had TNA EV2, which was ECW getting involved in TNA, and then we had the GFW angle. You know, what would you guys say about the, you know, the whole TNA situation, TNA and the whole invasions that they've had?
Well, the only one that people actually probably do remember, even though it was more recent, is the GFW one, because the ECW one wasn't as good as it sounds. Because when you hear it, you're like, oh, ECW invading. Sounds amazing. Then you actually watch it, you're like, this is shit.
Yeah, that was. I think that was more of a House of Hardcore invasion, if anything. Not a really ECW invasion.
That's what it felt like.
Yeah.
Honestly, I see why they did the GFW thing, but at the same time, I'm not sure it was smart to have a separate wrestling company presented as heels. They kind of just came off as Jeff Jarrett and his band of goons. We didn't really know anyone else from GFW, you know, that wasn't already Chris Masters or Justin Gabriel repackaged with the same gimmick. Oh, and Sanjay Dutt, the guy who kept interfering in people's matches. They didn't really do much to establish them as this big power. And that's
Brian Myers, people also remember, too. People remember him as Curt Hawkins.
He was Curt Hawkins, but they didn't really explore the whole Brian Myers character, because Myers is actually a very well-known character on the independent scene. You know, he's a prominent talent in Pro Wrestling Syndicate, and you actually see, like, a personality added to the face. In the TNA GFW angle, he was just a face, like, lost in the shuffle. Like, you had...
He is a very good talent, though.
He is a good talent, and his wrestling was able to save him, but, you know, he didn't really have much of a character, so thus... How are fans going to attach themselves to a character that they don't really know much about? And that's what killed the GFW invasion angle for me. It wasn't long enough, and the guys weren't established enough, besides from Jeff Jarrett, to really make an impact. But the one thing I think it did do was it did help Drew Galloway and his rise to the TNA, main
event. How long were they around for? Not even a month, right?
Not even a month.
Yeah, I mean, that whole angle, I mean, I think it kind of fucked GFW up, because GFW was a really, really big thing going on at that time, like, prior to that, because you saw there was a whole thing. Jeff Jarrett was like, I'm going to make this into the biggest wrestling company in the world. We're going to have partnerships with all the great promotions. AAA, you had it with NJPW. But all the different promotions here and there. And, you know,
I'm actually looking at the roster for GFW. It sounds like a pretty stacked roster if you're a fan of talent.
Yeah, Rich, I mean, you and me, we were talking about it prior. Like I said, prior to the TNA angle, we said, yo, this is big. They had their first event. I was like, oh, my God, we're excited for this. I'm ready to see this. It had a great following, social media, too. People were excited to see it. And, you know, this whole thing with the Jarretts, the McMahons, that kind of tossed it in a little bit. That kind of made people go, oh, so, you know, there's this new other independent promotion coming out. But then when they kind of...
I'm hyped. They have Bullet Club. They sold me right there.
Yeah, that's...
They have the full Bullet Club.
We were talking about that, yeah. And I mean, that kind of that I mean, it brought it into the American spotlight because they were just, you know, like GFW basically at that time was just a band of independent stars. That's all. But then when you brought in TNA, that kind of screwed everything up. I think that kind of shifted them a little bit off, because now you're saying, okay, now this is just TNA trying to get involved and getting some publicity. And I think that's the reason why it kind of failed, I think, on both parts. Because now if you see GFW now, what are they really doing now? You know, they don't have a solid TV deal. They're not really doing anything online. They're not really
all
coming out with...
All their shows are basically in minor league baseball stadiums.
Yeah, I mean, they got that going for them. But what about, like, you know, digital? Like, digital-wise, like, how are they going to reach everybody at home?
I think Jarrett is purposely holding off on announcements, so that down the road when he does make them, it has a bigger impact. I kind of see what he's doing. It's sort of smart, but I think his biggest challenge is trying to make GFW its own identity. There's been you know, videos on Twitter passed around of like the amp tapings. I look at GFW right now, and it kind of looks like a copy of TNA, just done on a more successful financial platform. You know, the image looks the same, they have a six-sided ring, it kind of has the same look and feel. Obviously, we'll have to see, like, storyline-wise, how things go and how...
They have a lot of TNA talent.
But, yeah, it feels like another TNA, just maybe with more money. And I think GFW needs to establish its own identity, and try to break away from being compared to TNA, because it's not going to do themselves any favors, and I'm sure Jarrett, you know, doesn't want to be compared to TNA.
True. I mean, after that deal with him coming back to TNA, he kind of said that, you know, he's given up his share of TNA and just giving it to them, and that's it, going to high sailing back to where he's going. And I think that's smart of him, but, you know, that whole angle with the GFW TNA thing, I think that kind of That wasn't good, I think. That wasn't good, period. I mean, TNA, they were just trying to be a bunch of hogs, catching all this publicity and all this momentum. I think that's what really was stupid. That was kind of greedy of them, because they were that desperate. I mean, if you see them now, they're so desperate right now. They can't pay the talent. They're lowering down on the costs. Everything is going down. They're only taping shit because it's cheaper for them, rather than making it live and going through all that shit. Their whole Destination America deal is done, kaput. Now, what are they going to do with the TV? What's going to be next for them? Are they going to be digital platform?
What's ironic, though, is that Impact has kind of been the best it's been all year because of this whole World Title Series thing. And that came because they had to use old footage tape from July of, like, one-night-only tapings. But they've turned it into, like, this ongoing tournament. It's kind of ironic because it's probably the best television TNA is putting out right now, but because it's been so long in the year and they've lost so much momentum, you know, no one's really paying attention.
True. I mean, the way that they're building it, they kind of, like, you know what I mean? It's kind of like a desperate move for every little thing. It's like, okay, let's make this guy world champion. Let's make this guy world champion. It's a game of hot potato. But yet, you know, they're not getting that much publicity. Because if you look at all, like, in a whole year span of title reigns between TNA and, let's say, WWE, for example, or, let's say, Lucha, they've had only one or two champions, one or two title changes. But I'm talking about, like, major title, like WWE title or the, what you call, heavyweight title.
They
right
had
there.
Two champions this year.
Yeah. And now, if you see
the
TNA...
You had Brock Lesnar. They had Brock Lesnar.
The Seth
Rollins,
and possibly Roman Reigns. I'm predicting.
I see that at WrestleMania.
Yeah,
WrestleMania.
I see him being challenged.
Right now, I think Rollins holds on till WrestleMania, and then you throw Ambrose in the main event. That is when Reigns is gonna win the belt. I just see it happening.
True. I mean, we'll see some of it, but
ROH had two, maybe three champions this year.
Yeah, but, I mean, you know, like...
Even that many?
Yeah, I mean, TNA, how many championships have they really had? They've had, like, over, what, 10 title changes in 1 year span?
I don't know.
Yeah, that's kind of... That's showing they're desperate. They're desperate for attention.
Right now, they don't have a champion. Before that, it was EC3. Before that, it was...
No, it was Matt Hardy.
Angle.
Then EC3.
Yeah, Matt Hardy, EC3.
Yeah, before that was Hardy, then it was EC3. Before him, it was Angle. Before Angle, it was Lashley. And before Lashley, I think it was Rude.
Yeah, Rude.
Well, yeah, does anyone want to know a spoiler?
No, not really.
Save it.
Yeah, we don't want to ruin things for our listeners.
Yeah, it's already been released, but I mean...
It's out there. You could just look for it.
Yeah, I mean...
If you really want to know.
But seriously, who watches TNA, though?
Yeah, what the fuck is TNA? But, I mean... That's the thing with TNA. I mean, you know, they've kind of flopped it with the Invasion angle because it really didn't give them that much momentum.
The only thing with TNA is their results are already leaked months before it even happens.
That's what happens when you book a show like that, you know? You can only do so much when you tape so far.
Well, the one thing that is kind of like, wow, is James Storm... Didn't even know he was in that whole TNA World Title Cup thing before he went to NXT.
Well, yeah,
said, I didn't even know I was in it.
Yeah, because that was from a match taped. Those were matches taped back in July, and you know now it's October, and you know it happened on NXT about 2 weeks before it aired, but I've also heard that TNA deliberately did this. You know, they planned this out in advance to fill out the rest of their television content because they knew they had to find some way to stay on the air after Bound for Glory because they weren't supposed to have any live events after that. So, you know, I think it was supposed to go down like this to give them more, you know, more content, but... I mean,
They're supposedly filming more shows in the Hammerstein Ballroom in January, February, they said.
I could see it happening. I mean, I feel like TNA was at their peak.
If they're still around by January, February.
Yeah, I feel like the shows this year kind of missed, you know, a little bit of that feeling that last year had. But... You know, it's a very good market for TNA to want to stay with. But I also hear they want to do things outside of America, too, because they have a big following in the UK, and then they're doing this India tour soon. You know.
Oh, What's-His-Face is, like, the main star of that tour,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, Mahabali Shira.
Mahabali Shira. And then they have Kali. From what I heard, Kali's having a partnership with TNA. And, like, he has a wrestling school there and in one of the villages there. And he's actually having these young talent, the, you know, young people there. Like, India, there's a big following for wrestling. Like, they are, there's a lot of craze there for it. Like, how you know how it was in the 80s here? That was kind of like how it is there now. Because they kind of, you know, they're not the kind of people that are just going to be like, oh, like, you know, part of them will be, oh, this is bullshit, oh, it's fake, whatever. They're kind of believable to into it, you know? Because there's a big following of Bollywood there. Because, you know, they've had almost, like, if you look at Hollywood right now, they come out with a certain amount of movies a year. Probably about, I'd say, under 200, maybe 300 films right now. It might be more because of the internet, but that was back then. But if you see now, like, Bollywood, compared to Bollywood, they make probably about 1,000 films in a year. Can you believe that? Almost 1,000 films in a year. Like, how do you do that, you know? That's, you know, that's a world record there. But that's because the you know, the audience there, they're kind of absorbed with entertainment. So when they see wrestling coming through, they'll give them money. They'll be like, you take my money. I'm ready. I'm ready to see this. So that's what I think TNA is smart in doing that. But, you know, they're kind of, I mean, that's kind of.
They're around to do it.
True. I mean, they've done this in the UK too, trying to get people from the UK. But again, I think it goes back to desperation. Speaking of desperation, how about when that time when EV2 happened? TNA and ECW. Like TNA, they were kind of falling back from the publicity of, you know, the whole January 4th takeover with, you know, the competing head-to-head with WWE, and then they kind of fell back. And then what ended up happening? ECW invades. And that was kind of, I mean, if we go back to that, that was more of a House of Hardcore invasion than an ECW invasion.
That was more Tommy Dreamer's company.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, you have that big pay-per-view, too, the Hardcore Justice pay-per-view, which I think was pretty good when you saw that, because you saw names like New Jack come out. You have people like the Gangsters come back. You see Dudley. You see all these extreme stuff happening. And it was kind of interesting for a little while. But then after that, when it kind of fell off, they were kind of like, okay, well, what can we do now, you know? Like, how would you guys see the EV2 angle, you know? Like, compared to the GFW angle, do you think it kind of was more successful, or did it come out a little bit less?
I think it was good in some ways, but bad in others. I mean, you're comparing this to the GFW angle. I mean, anything is better than GFW angle, in my opinion, at least.
True.
Because the guys in EV2 are already established, you know, you already knew who they are. All they have to do is just do something shocking, and boom, you got something right there. GFW, you know, they were guys in WWE who were, they were established, but they weren't really, like, you know, well-known like that, you know. They needed to do something else to really, you know, make us turn around and pay attention to who they are, and we didn't really get that, and that's why the payoff wasn't as big as they would have liked. EV2, you know, it was kind of the same thing, but a little bit easier to establish those guys. And then you had like the whole Hardcore Justice pay-per-view. So I think it was just an excuse for House of Hardcore to get some publicity, and ultimately it kind of fizzled out. But obviously TNA was trying to divert viewers away from the fact that they just tried to go head-to-head with WWE and utterly failed. But the ironic thing is, if you look back at it now, like, the footage, like, TNA, the arenas were packed. Like, they were going on the road. And it looked like they were actually finally starting to get somewhere as a company, you know, to become a legit number two threat. But, you know, Hogan and Bischoff just didn't have the right creative mindset to really have that kind of influence going forward. And it really hurt the company more than it helped, because they flushed literally all that money down the toilet. You had AJ Styles, Ric Flair, you had so many people, and it completely flopped. You could have names all over the place, but if you don't know what to do with them, what good are they?
It's poor book.
What good are you, you know?
True. I mean, as you've seen in most invasion angles, if the pieces are in place, you know, the evasion doesn't work. You've seen that with the Nexus angle, you've seen that with DNA, but if you've seen that with the early invasions with NWO, Outsiders, and you've seen that with ECW, early WWF, that was something big, because there was, you know, everything was in place at the right time, at the right place. So that brings us now to what's happening right now. If you've seen Raw this past Monday, you know, there was kind of an aura coming through, something new, something different. Because if you look at the Raws in the beginning of the year and the Raws now, looking towards the end, and believe me, if you look probably in the next few Raws until the end of the year, there's a trend, and you'll start seeing that. Do you ever notice that there's more of a NXT showing there?
Well, WWE is desperate to turn their ratings back around to the upward side, so you're going to believe that they're going to start using a lot more NXT, and it's just a matter of the transition from Triple H to Vince, you know, how that goes, but, you know, I have a little bit of faith. You know, Tyler Breeze was already kind of a guy who you could see on the main roster. It's just a matter of
when they were actually going to call him.
Yeah, who do you put him with? Dolph Ziggler is kind of like a good idea. And then Summer Rae, like, you know, Breeze is already kind of like a more flamboyant Dolph Ziggler. But what baffles me about that angle is, was Summer, like, using Breeze to make Dolph jealous? Because why would you make the guy who just, you know, said he didn't want you jealous, but, you know, none of it makes sense, and it's tied to that awful Love Square storyline thing with Rusev, Summer, Lana, and Dolph that, you know, WWE's still trying to shake the cobwebs off of, but, you know, hopefully Breeze, you know, is more established in time and can hopefully grow past this angle and grow some momentum on his own. What was sad was on NXT, he was kind of the guy who lost a lot of his matches. He lost every match on TakeOver this year.
True. I mean, I think, like, if you've seen this year, more people have been being brought up now from NXT. And instead of being put on SmackDown, I mean, they're trying right now to bring people on SmackDown because there's less of a following there on SmackDown. They're trying to get their ratings up there. But you also see it on Raw now more. Because you saw people like, not names like Braun Strowman, who wasn't even in NXT, who was a Performance Center, alumni. And you saw people like, many of the names, Kevin Owens, you've seen, many great names from NXT come over to Raw. As many suspected names, too. Baron Corbin, who's, they're saying is going to come up soon. They don't know when.
Well, Tyler Bleed. Everyone thought he was going to come up much. Everyone thought he was going to come up with when it was Shields versus
the Wyatts, right? Yeah. I mean, that's the good thing, though, because, you know, that's what we're kind of looking for. WWE is trying to get this trend of, okay, let's make our own talent instead of bringing in other people from other companies, like, let's say, you know, or someone who's been there for a long time before. Let's go ahead and create our own talent. So I think that's smart of them, and it's very economic of them, too, you know, because like now they have...
Another good example for John Cena's U.S. Open title at Hell in a Cell, everyone could have swore it was going to be an NXT guy.
True, and then they caught off on surprise with the AAA Mega Heavyweight Champ, Alberto Del Rio.
Chris, in your opinion, who did you think was actually going to answer the challenge?
I mean, we brought up a couple of names in the last two podcasts. You've seen this, right? We thought it was going to be Baron. We thought it was going to be Brian. Thought it was going to be Joe. We saw a whole bunch of names.
I was hoping it was going to be Breeze.
That's who everyone in the world was saying.
Yep, indeed. And I actually was hoping for Joe. But then when there was a rumor that it was going to be Joe, I was so hyped. I was like, oh, my God, it's going to happen. It's going to happen. And the next thing it's not Joe.
WWE swerved everyone.
Yeah. And then Del Rio came out. And that was kind of a blow to everybody. Everyone was like, oh, so now we see how everything's going on. You'll see more of this in the Shoot
podcast.
But
everyone liked it, though.
Yeah. I mean, there's a whole discussion on that we could talk, you know? But, like, I mean, this brings it up to, you know, NXT and Raw and WWE right now, the main roster. Do you ever feel that there's going to be a new NXT revolution with the current WWE main roster? Because, you know, we're closer now to Survivor Series. Survivor Series is almost about to happen now, you know? So how is that going to play a role now, you know?
Well, I know everyone is probably going to want this, but it probably won't happen. Team NXT versus Team WWE.
Down the line,
I can't see it happening.
See it happening either, because all the big names will be called up.
I mean, I think some point it will happen, but not in the context where it will be...
If NXT wins, you know, does that say the main roster sucks? And if Team WWE wins, that doesn't really help push NXT to really establish themselves as people well known. So I think for that reason, they should try to steer clear of. And then it just sounds like another rehash of the Nexus angle. You know, we've already been there. You know, we can have like a ball with all of this new talent, but let's establish them individually, allow them to branch out. You know,
and a lot of the NXT talent is better than it is now than it was back then.
Yeah, true. Definitely.
I mean, if you really think about it, do you really think... We haven't mentioned this either. I'm really surprised we haven't. It just hit me now. When we talk about invasions, how about when they had the Ruthless Aggression era with Raw versus SmackDown? You remember those days, right? Where it was really big. You saw Raw...
When SmackDown was actually worth watching?
Yeah, when it was really, really... When it was really high, that whole period... That was really interesting at that time. For me, that was crazy because every Survivor
Series.
When they had
the Super Shows.
Yeah, and you had. No, the Super Shows, I mean, that kind of killed it because it wasn't SmackDown versus Raw. It was actually just WWE. But, like, when you saw SmackDown versus Raw, like, I say, what, 2004, 2005 ish, you saw every Survivor Series, it would be Raw versus SmackDown, Royal Rumble. Every Royal Rumble, it would be SmackDown versus Raw. The last two people on the Royal Rumble. Always be a Raw guy or a SmackDown guy, and everybody would be like, oh, shit, oh, my God, something's going to happen. And, like, you know, every other pay-per-view, you saw this whole integration of other, you know, specific names from different brands coming in. Do you think there's kind of some kind of parallel with that, like SmackDown versus Raw versus TNA and, I mean, not TNA, sorry, what the fuck am I saying? WWE main roster versus NXT?
I don't think so.
Because I actually see a big parallel between that, because back then you saw them, like, you gotta understand, it was off the heels of the whole the Monday Night Wars. You saw SmackDown versus Raw. You know, that was kind of a competition going on there. But now, when you see that, do you think they'll ever be able to do a thing where it's like NXT versus the main roster? Because I think I see that now, especially with the Divas Revolution. Because, you know, if you really think about it, pay-per-view-wise, every pay-per-view that you saw, and it was a main roster Divas title match or Divas match, people kind of looked at that and said, ah, whatever. And then when they saw NXT, like, TakeOver with what'd you call it, Bayley and with Sasha. Yeah, with
Sasha.
That was a hit. And, you know, that people kind of drew comparisons from those two, saying, oh, NXT is better because of this. WWE's kind of, you know, the main roster is kind of, like, you know, they're not doing nothing, you know, where some things overshadow other. Do you really, like, because I see that kind of, you know, you guys wouldn't agree with that?
To some extent. I don't know.
It's kind of iffy.
I mean, right now, because I think Divas Revolution, obviously, we would probably say, you know, we'd all probably agree that NXT has a better Divas division than the main roster. What'd you guys say?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Completely. And then when you talk about main roster-wise, it's kind of a hard debate, right? Because when you look at NXT versus the main roster, like heavyweight title match, the IC title versus the NXT lineup that they have, you know? That's kind of debatable right there. Wouldn't you guys agree?
To some extent.
Yeah.
Because right now, the this week, upcoming Wednesday, we're going to have Finn Balor facing Apollo Crews.
Everyone knows, indie-wise, that's an amazing match. Prince True. David versus Ua Nation, amazing match in indies. So and just imagine what they could do in NXT.
And we never got to see that in the indies, but now we get to see it on a WWE platform, you know? Whereas right now, what's the program right now in WWE? They have Seth Rollins versus Roman Reigns.
For the 3,000th time?
Yeah, that kind of, you know, it's kind of a different dynamic, you know, when it kind of puts everything in a different light.
And look at the tag team division in NXT compared to main roster. NXT, it's Jordan and Gable.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have Dash and Dawson. You have Enzo and Cass, the Vaudevillains. And who you have on the main roster? New Day, Usos, Dudleys, Primetime Players, Lucha Dragons.
True.
This game played out.
True. And what about the mid-card titles, too? I mean, with the IC title and the US title, not much is really happening. I mean, just besides the fact that Del Rio came back, won the title, Cena's out of the picture. But, you know, I mean, how are they going to really do anything like that with the current picture that they have with, you know, NXT doesn't even have a mid-card title, yet they produce some really good rivalries. Like, if you look at the format of every NXT TakeOver pay-per-view, it's the title match, the world title women's match, women's title match, tag title match, possibly, or men's, some kind of tag title, or
everyone else.
Yeah, or like a regular match, but has a really solid rivalry. In this day and age, do you ever see it in a pay-per-view where there's a really solid rivalry? I mean, when you see Bray Wyatt and Roman Reigns and Hell in a Cell, that was kind of, you know, people kind of looked at them and said, oh, okay. But it wasn't believable. Like, you couldn't really invest anything into that, you know?
You're like, oh, again?
Yeah, you're like, oh, whatever. You know, it's like, okay, we've seen this, you know, bring something new.
Like, boom. The only person in the mid-card, it seems like he's getting a good rivalry, Owens.
I agree. Because you got Cesaro coming up and everything. But I think it's all product of who is there and who has the exposure. And, I mean, when you see, like, an invasion angle with NXT coming into the main roster, I think that plays an important role to see if which, you know, if they can really play that off, you know?
But everyone knows the Divas division at NXT is much better.
The fact is. And I think they've actually done, it's already an invasion angle, if you already noticed. Because you really do see, you know, the whole thing going on right now, where you see the, you know, the Divas coming in, and then, you know, the whole Divas revolution. Because remember that night when Nikki Bella was out making a promo, and then who came out? The birth of Team Bad, birth of PCB. You know, that was kind of an invasion on its own. Do you guys think?
Yeah,
I agree.
I think it was, the only bad thing is that it had Stephanie McMahon's fingerprints all over it. Whereas I think if you had, you know, each of those acts come up within the next few weeks and kind of make their own mark, it would have had a better impact going forward. Because then we just got a endless array of, you know, six Diva matches for about 2 months straight. And as you saw, like, the Brooklyn crowd didn't take warmly to that on Raw. So,
true.
You know.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, when you talk about invasions, you can also tie into, you know, actual angles that occur versus angles that, you know, that are like mini angles, some things, like certain developments that occur. But, I mean, when you talk, we've already talked about most invasions, you know, that occur in wrestling. And pretty much these are the future, you know, these are the invasions that occur. And they're really, really influential. But, I mean, in the future, we could see some more invasions. We might not. You know, we wouldn't really know. Depends on if the pieces are there, if it's in the right place, and everything's all right.
Well, the one invasion I would love to see is Ring of Honor / New Japan invading WWE.
I think anything with WWE would be. AAA with WWE, that would be something there. But
the reason I'm saying Ring of Honor and New Japan, because they have such good talent that could coexist with WWE.
True. But, I mean, WWE, they're kind of leaning on everything. They're kind of on the side with invasions now or getting involved with other promotions. And I think that's what's going to lead to their downfall. Because, you see, WWE, they're not really going to last forever. Do you guys really think they're going to last forever? I really don't feel like they're going to last forever. I mean, that's hard to say for now.
When you have money, it's pretty easy to stick around. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah,
true.
They're a multi-million dollar company, and it's going to... They're going to be around a long, long time.
True. And what about, you know, I mean, the Roman Empire, they lasted for a while, but then what ended up happening? They fell. You know, it's inevitable, so, I mean, we'll have to see what goes on.
The Roman Empire didn't have a lot of money, and they didn't run wrestling shows, and they didn't take other companies down.
But they didn't have they had Julius Caesar, not Kevin Dunn. That's the difference.
Kevin Dunn.
I think that's the day when WWE will go out of business. Well, I mean, that kind of wraps up our whole invasion podcast right here. I guess, you know, we talked about everything right now. We're going to come out soon with other podcasts. Be sure to hold on and stay tuned for our December podcast, which is going to be the award
show. That's going to be the biggest podcast that we had. It will be the biggest. It will be the longest podcast we have.
We're going to have categories.
It's going to be very entertaining.
We're going to have,
you guys.
Yeah, we're going to have categories, awards, all the other stuff. Be sure to check out PWO online on Facebook. Please be sure to check out our Google Plus pages. Also, follow us on Twitter. We'll have our Twitter handles on the bottom. Be sure to check us out. Also, be sure to check out the YouTube page. Give us a share, a like, and subscribe, comment,